Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
All right, let's bring it. It's Tuesdays with Neil. Sir, always a pleasure. Welcome.
It is fantastic to be here in this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. I hope you guys are doing well also.
So, this has been a time where guys are going to get cut. And we've been talking about Dalvin Cook and DeAndre Hopkins, and Cook says, hey, we'd like to hook up and form some sort of super team. But they've also suffered what is, in the end, the cruelty of the business of the NFL. They both ended up getting cut for financial reasons. How do you view that part of it, and how much shelf life do you think Dalvin Cook, for example, has left in him?
I'll say this. I had a snicker when I heard the dream team of Dalvin Cook and DeAndre Hopkins post 30. I don't know if the team is going to be substantially improved with the addition of both of them.
Agreed.
Their cash flow is going to drop a bit, but that's the nature of the NFL. You know, the super team concept is fun. It's something we always visit in June because this always happens in the NBA. That concept doesn't exist in the NFL. You can't do that. They built their structure to not allow that, and the NBA kind of didn't. But different models, different reasons. I think with Hopkins, you've got an experienced player that can still go out and get the ball. He can still get open. More than anything, I wouldn't call wide receiver a position of significant declination over time. You can still be a very effective receiver. Receiver is also not a position, I feel anyway, from a team perspective, mandates massive stats for you to make a huge impact on the game. Hopkins can draw coverage. We're not talking about A.J. Green at the end of his time. A.J. Green was washed his final year. You can see that. From what I saw of Hopkins, he's not at that point. He can still play. He'll still command some money. It's just not going to be on a long-term deal, I wouldn't think. I think 2 years, something around $13.5 million, nice chunk of that in year one guaranteed, I would imagine, is what he'll go for. Cook is interesting. It's not a problem with his role. I don't feel that we can say he's definitely done. Statistics don't work on his side. More than anything, though, it's the injury. He can tell us via Twitter all he wants that he's ready to go, that he's perfect, and that's not often the case with running backs. The Dolphins are going to want to sign him, and I think both are now continuing the same type of wait-and-see that was going on when the Vikings had his rights and they were trying to see if Miami would cave and give up an asset for him. Miami doesn't want that contract. Well, you know, Cook does. So he's going to wait and see if a market materializes. And that's something that can happen for a variety of reasons. You know, guys can get hurt. Does Dalvin Cook need to be in training camp with the team to figure out his role, to know what he needs to do? He's an experienced pro. It depends on the offense that they're running, but I would imagine most veterans, certainly ones coming off of an injury, probably don't want to go through training camp. So I don't think he is incredibly motivated to sign today. And because of that, he can take a wait-and-see approach the same way the Dolphins will, because they want to try to drive his price down. So I would imagine, just my guess, I would imagine we'll probably not be hearing about Cook getting signed anywhere for a couple weeks yet. You know, now it's kind of the blackout period. They're all on vacation. They're not going to, you know, they don't need to make a move now. There's no point in signing the guy. I was talking to you about this regarding Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. There's, you know, before the draft, which is the time where he has the most value, from the beginning of free agency to a couple days before the draft, what's the point in signing him? If he gets hit by a bus, you're saddled with his contract. Until you absolutely have to make that deal, you're not going to. I don't think it's too dissimilar for Cook. So I think he's a talented player. I think he has three down ability. I think he's a solid pass protector as well as a pass catcher. There are things that you can do in certain offenses with him, and I think he can generate a market, but this is just kind of the silent issue the league has with running back. Teams don't pay him because it's not what the market pays, and because of that, it's just naturally going to drive his price down. He's got to get somebody willing to pay him more in order for him to be able to leverage anything against anybody else. I'm not sure when that would happen, but barring injury, it's not going to be a very strong market for him anytime soon.
Yeah, and here's the other part. I think more and more teams in the league are taking the attitude that we heard articulated by Bill Walsh in that documentary about the 49ers. He sits down with Randy Cross, and Randy Cross tells the story that Bill Walsh looks at him and says, you know what, you have five more years in the league, but only two really good ones. I only want the two really good ones. That's the spot where guys like Cook and Hopkins happen to be with certain teams. Others like the Dolphins, who just feel they need another part to get them over the top, would be more willing to pay because they feel they're that part away from being an extended playoff team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you get to a point where you've surpassed the 500 mark. You're going to, at the very least, compete aggressively for a division championship, advance in the postseason. I think the Dolphins can make the argument. They have the type of team that can do that. And from there, for a team that's in a position like that, it's a matter of what your salary cap position is and what your depth chart looks like. When you have the cheap quarterback, you have the ability to pay a premium for a specialty player. In other words, the money the Dolphins would theoretically be able to pay for Cook is easier for them to handle than it would be for, say, I'm just making it up, Buffalo. They are a team that's spending a bit more. Miami would have the ability to say, look, you know what, he's probably worth five to us, but we can pay him 10 and he does exactly what we want him to do. Otherwise, we're going to pay somebody less, save money, but he's not the player that Cook is. You can make those decisions when you have that kind of flexibility. He's in that phase of his career. It wouldn't surprise me if he plays on one team in 23 and another team in 24, for those 2 years like you're talking about. I would agree with that, but teams are going to take the approach of 1 year at a time and see where it goes. How much Cook is going to be able to negotiate against that remains to be seen, but recent history is not on his side at all. It's hard for a running back to get a decent contract. I say that, though, and Sony Michel just signed back with the Rams. As far as I know, he didn't play last year, right? I mean, he's probably getting a minimum contract, and he's playing in a system that he is familiar with and coaches and trainers that know him and know his body. So you see why they would sign him. But the market is full of guys like that. That's the thing. It's very much a fit. It's very much an opportunity. I think Dalvin Cook will have some success wherever he goes because I think he's a good player. The value, though, is not incredibly high anymore. And it's right. Tough. I mean, it's written on the walls. You knew he wasn't going to play in Minnesota this season. The time there was over. And Minnesota is paying more on the back end in terms of a cap hit than they would have paid up front had they signed him to, a lesser deal, obviously. They pay him for those 2 years, and then they're able to get rid of him with, some cost, but it isn't cash. It's a valid business deal that they made. You see why that they made it. It doesn't help Cook much, and he's going to, kind of be settled with 1 year deals for however long he's in the NFL. That would be my guess. But whoever gets him this year is going to get one of the better running backs in the league, and how they use him could definitely make a big impact on their viability, certainly late in the season when you kind of need to have that versatility. If they don't use him very much, if he's still fresh, Miami just makes the most sense overall. I think that's probably where he ends up going. It's just, right now is a matter of figuring out the dollars because you still got to pay cash. But Miami has the ability to say, we can pay a premium for a guy like this because he fits what we need to do. And if we have to pay a little bit more than that, that's fine. That's the price of winning.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where it is right now. because I was making the example earlier about Miles Sanders. Is Miles Sanders a better running back than DeAndre Swift? In my opinion, yes. But Philadelphia, from a business point of view, said, nah, we're not going to give you a second contract. And they went and they signed DeAndre Swift. And I think, again, this is the business of the league and how they conduct it, because that is a position you're looking at where I think there are many in the league who feel like it's interchangeable parts at running back.
Yeah, and if you look at it, what happened with DeAndre Swift? Same exact thing that happened to Sanders.
Yep.
And it's going to happen again to somebody else next year. And eventually, shame on me, I forget the name of the running back the Lions drafted. That'll be him in 4 years.
That's Gibbs. Gibbs from Alabama.
Gibbs, yeah, who I think is a great running back. I think he fits what Detroit wants to do. They're going to get panned for the pick, but I think Detroit was just saying, with two picks, you know, the idea here that we can get two good players certainly is there, but long-term, are we going to be able to keep both of these guys? Probably not. It's a lot of money to tie into 1 year to two non-quarterbacks. So strategically, I can see why they would do it, because it's like, well, you know, at most, tag, and it doesn't seem like the tag value of running back is going up. In fact, it might go down by then, which would be really weird. You put that together, it's a fairly reasonable six-year contract with his option right. year. This parallels the situation that the Steelers are in with Najee Harris. You're taking a player that you need. You know, that's a position of emphasis when they drafted Harris. If we look at this financially, where it was going, my estimate was something like $32 million over 6 years. If you go 4 years cheap, option year, tag, that's a solid deal overall if you think about it. And 6 years is a pretty long time for, you know, in comparison to the average
that's
NFL
right.
player.
Right.
At that point, does Harris have anything left? I don't know. But he can, you know, get in line with the rotating nature of running backs everywhere else. They're going to trade out an older one for a cheaper one, somebody that's on a cheaper deal. But the value of the position goes down after that peak, that five-year mark for the early drafted guys, or maybe the 5-6-year mark for guys to get extensions. At that point, they're going to go back into the assembly line with everybody else and kind of, you know, continue rotating around the league. You can trade out one for another, but I agree with your point completely. Sanders is the better player, but Sanders has much higher market value.
That's
so it makes a lot more sense. If you can get a guy, and I'm going to use generic numbers here, if you can get 90% of a guy for 50% of the pay, there's no way you're not going to do that. So that's what catches running backs. There are too many of them who are too similar to one another. It's hard to distinguish in value. Alvin Kamara, you know, is a third-round pick for reasons he can't really control, which is largely size. Look at the value that the Saints are able to get out of him. I don't know how much longer his career is going to last, but he's going to do the Bill Walsh two-year thing, one year with one team, 1 year with another, and then he'll be out of the league. It's happening with all of them. It's really kind of an interesting phenomenon economically, of how obvious it is, to the point where you can almost predict where they're going to go and what team is going to have a need and when. But the draft provides so much of that. You see two guys taken in the first round now. One is a true high-end three-down player. The other, I think, is more opportunity rather than value. But it's not that they're not, it's not that they're not valued within a structure in an NFL offense. It's that their peak value seems to be something around overall $6 million a year for about 7 years for a high-end running back career now. You know, I don't know if we see, although he's still looking for work, I don't know if we see Adrian Peterson again. I don't know if we see LaDainian Tomlinson again. These are players in an era that doesn't exist anymore. And it really seems like players from the last 7-8 seasons are going to probably get 6-7 years in the league and probably not a whole lot more than that anymore.
Stephon Diggs has now joined the category of Randy Moss, Chad Ochocinco, Terrell Owens. They'd like to call the plays.
Oh,
goodness gracious. What did you think when you saw that?
The funny thing with Diggs, those who knew the game knew how good he was pretty early in his career. I mentioned Kamara earlier. Kamara, third-round draft pick, he's small, short, I should say. Yeah. Diggs, I'm still not sure why he was a fifth-round pick, but
no.
Two teams now, he's done some stuff that kind of makes you wonder if they didn't realize that, you know, he might have that thing about him. I absolutely loved Stephon Diggs. I loved his game. You can see it. He has such a supernatural kind of bend to him. He has a way of forcing separation upon his defender that very few receivers have ever really had. I figured he would be something of a success. The fact that he is as good as he is and has been is not overly shocking to me.
Right.
But I think the thing we need to look at more than anything, and we're ignoring this, and it's really convenient why we ignore it, he's doing the same stuff in Buffalo now that he was doing in Minnesota. The difference is it was a lot more fun and a lot more convenient to saddle the whole issue onto Kirk Cousins. You know, Kirk Cousins is, without question, the easiest guy in the league to make fun of now that Joe Flacco isn't prominent anymore. Mm-hmm. You're not doing that to Josh Allen, though. So the question, it seems like everybody is totally pro Diggs to the point where they're completely ignoring how he left Minnesota. He's in Buffalo now. Whose fault is this? I don't know if we're ready to blame Diggs yet, you know, according to Bills fans. Let's blame the offensive coordinator. We can't blame the quarterback because, you know, he's our everything here.
Yep.
But it seems like they're stuck on the idea that Diggs, he's something different than what he was. This is exactly who we've seen him to be. A highly productive, highly talented receiver, one of the best of his generation, without question. And highly emotional, volatile, kind of hard to rein in. It takes specific leadership to be able to do that. And some of the ones that you mentioned, Terrell Owens, Chad Ochocinco, they had a lot of success in their careers, but they were at their best when everything was coming together. And I highly doubt any of that had anything to do with them calling plays, you know?
No.
So it seems to me he's lashing out more than anything. And what's the problem? I mean, go back into Buffalo. This was so funny to me because everybody wants to jump minute to minute in all these stories. You know, it has to be permanent. Right now, this is what happened. We have to have a conclusion now. This is obviously a fluid situation as far as Diggs goes in minicamp. Explain to me reasonably how it's not totally understandable. A player shows up on Monday to minicamp. They have meetings. They meet with everybody. He leaves before practice on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be any confusion about what just happened. He left. All right? The coach goes on record as saying, it's deeply disturbing to me. In other words, you had to have had some type of interaction that caused him to leave that you don't agree with. That's what happened. Okay? Paint everything else up however you want. Too many people make it out to be like, we only know these things, so this is what it must be. Got, you know, holdout has to be contract. Okay? Well, if it's his contract, why did he show up on Monday and leave Tuesday? It's not his contract. If McDermott didn't excuse him, it's not any type of personal issue. I'm going to bet it's something to do with the offensive coordinator telling him, you're going to get the ball in these situations. This is what your role is. This is what you're going to do. And he doesn't like that. That is no different than what happened to him in Minnesota. So it's with more money, with a better quarterback, in a better offense, more success, more room to shine, he's going back to the same thing. You got to manage that internally. They did a poor job of letting a lot of that get out. When you deal with that kind of that flavor, you know, that kind of personality, you have to learn from a PR perspective how to keep it under wraps. And a lot of it is probably lying. I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I will just say that I covered the Steelers when Antonio Brown was there. Nobody knew about any of that stuff for a long time, and there's a reason. They did a real good job of making sure the right information got out at the right time.
This is what
you can still
I say.
A ton of success. It's just it's going to end.
That's what I say all the time, Neil. All right? The first question I always ask when a trade is made or on the college level, why is the guy transferring? Why? That's the first question I ask. I just want to know what the reasons are for it. And this is the same guy when he played at Maryland, right? First time they played Maryland Beaver Stadium, he's one of the captains, goes out there, refused to shake Penn State's hand, turned around and left.
Yep.
Right? I'm not surprised.
Yeah, okay. That's what I mean. I'm not condemning it. I'm not saying that these things don't happen. And at the end of the day, it's football and shorts. Sure. You know, we're not crying about it. It's his opportunity to have his voice heard. Maybe they're not doing a good enough job of that. Brian Daboll is, I think we can fairly say, a phenomenal coach. He did an excellent job in Buffalo, did an excellent job in New York. Losing that and adding anybody is going to cause some disruption.
Sure.
And sometimes that's all it is. Some people don't deal with change very well. This is he didn't walk out in the middle of the game. You know, this isn't a massive deal. But the Bills are a trendy team. They're buzzworthy. Everybody kind of likes them. They want to see what's going on. He's going to bring that kind of heat upon them. I don't know if that's a big deal or not. I'm just saying he's not exactly... You know, people should be aware that this is kind of who Stephon Diggs is. Good or bad, that he's going to do these kinds of things.
Well, we're not crazy about change either. That's why we want you back on next Tuesday.
Definitely. I'm looking forward to it already.
All cool, my man. Have a great week.
You bet. Thanks for having me.